Let's talk with another real person, Al DeSalvio, in this, the 99th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for? Just kidding. I'm terrible at singing and I'm not, I don't have a good Lionel Richie impersonation, but thank you for listening. I'm glad you're here. Today we have another fun one, another real person chat where I'll be talking with Al DeSalvio, who happens to also coincidentally live in my home state of New Jersey. Yay, rah, rah. Go Bon Jovi. Go Bruce Springsteen. Go, what else is it? High taxes, I suppose. But anyway, so no, this was a good chat. Al is still working, nearing retirement, plans to retire the next year. So this will be a little different than I believe everyone I've chatted with so far is already in retirement or quasi-retirement at least. So there's a handful of questions that I didn't ask Al. They don't apply because they are for people in retirement. So slightly different than some of the questions I asked to other folks. But otherwise, nonetheless, great stuff and interesting to hear, as always, a real person, in this case, Al. Real person's view and insights and experiences and thoughts and concerns about planning for retirement. So without further ado, I give you my real person chat with Al DeSalvio. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. We have another fun one today, another edition of Let's Talk with a Real Person About Their Retirement Planning. With that said, I'm joined today by Al DeSalvio. Hey, Al.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
I'm super. Thank you for joining. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too.
So, Al, though, before we get going, I wanted to ask you, or let you know, I should say, I went skydiving the other day for the first time. The guy strapped himself to me. We jumped out of the plane. And as we were falling, he said, "So, how long have you been an instructor?" It wasn't very assuring to hear that. And did you know that the person who invented the Ferris wheel never met the person who invented the merry-go-round? Apparently, they traveled in different circles.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Don't worry. Pretty good.
Yeah, the rest of this is all uphill from here. So, okay. So again, I mentioned your name is Al DeSalvio. How did you first find out about this podcast, if you don't mind me asking?
Sure. So about 5 or 6 years ago, I started walking a lot. I decided I used to ride my bike a lot, and that got to be, you know, just too much effort to not only ride the bike, get the bike ready and get yourself ready to ride the bike. So I said, you know, I want to be exercising a little more often. And so I took up walking, and that kind of led to me listening to audio books as part of my thing. And the second thing it kind of led to me was podcasts. I listened to a variety of different podcasts, and then, you know, retirement was kind of looming around the corner, and I said, oh, I should kind of listen to some retirement podcasts. And I happened upon your show. It turned out to be one of my favorites. I actually went back and listened to all the episodes. Very, you know, interesting. I mean, some of them weren't all that relevant, but some of them were very relevant. And then I found others that I kind of, you know, latched onto. And so that kind of became a thing. And I got really intensive into the retirement planning, you know, in the last couple of years. So, you know, trying to getting close. So it's, you know, get more real, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So,
well, cool. So we'll you're about to get into that. So, what state do you live in at the moment?
I live in New Jersey. Pretty much lived my whole life in New Jersey. Love New Jersey. Currently, though, I am working in Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Ooh, okay.
So this is probably I don't know if you ever had any guests from South America yet.
I've not. No.
First for you. So, yeah. So I'll tell you all about the story probably a little later with one of your other questions. But
okay. I hear there's really good meat in Argentina.
There is very good meat. You got to put up with a little bit of chaos. And you know how people complain about the inflation in the U.S. being, what, 3-4% now? That's
right.
It's 3 days, 4 days worth of inflation here.
Oh, wow.
It's 300% a year.
Wow. So is meat no longer cheap, or it still is by U.S. standards?
By U.S. standards, everything is relatively inexpensive, except for electronics.
Okay.
But, by local standards, it's getting more expensive. So, but it's still very popular, and there's a lot of it. So a lot of people are out about eating.
Yeah. Okay. And the only thing I really know about Argentina is I had a Maradona jersey like 20 years ago.
There you go.
You still see those floating around, or is that done at this point?
Yeah, no, he's still pretty known. There's murals of him all over the place here, okay. And Messi. You got to get the Miami Messi.
That's right, the pink Miami jersey. Yeah. There's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal recently about Messi saying how he's one of the most untouched, unfouled players. I guess out of respect, people just kind of let him be.
Yeah.
Now that he's in the U.S. league. How old are you? Not to be too personal, but I figured it's relevant. So how old are you, if you don't mind me
asking? So I'm 63. I'll be 64 in a couple of months.
Okay. Do you have a significant other?
I do. I have a wonderful wife who we've been married about 5 years. We've been together for about 12 years. It's both our second marriage. We each have three kids. They're all independent. They've been independent for quite a while. And one little grandchild.
And a housekeeper named Alice?
I don't have a housekeeper named Alice. Yeah, and it is funny because it is three boys and three girls, although I brought two boys and one girl in, and she brought two girls and one boy. But when we got married, we did a wedding picture, and we tried to put the, everybody in their perspective square.
Right.
from the Brady Bunch.
Interesting. But you said both your kids, they're all independent on their own.
All six of them.
They are, okay.
Are independent, so they're all living somewhere else.
Retirement status sounds like you're still working. You said you're working in Buenos Aires at the moment. Can you give us a little summary about that?
I'm still working. I plan to retire in January of 2025.
Okay.
If we would have been doing this a year ago, or maybe just a little bit over a year ago, my plan was to retire in February of 24.
Okay.
So things changed. I ended up getting a call from a previous person I worked with and say, hey, I got this assignment in Argentina. It's kind of right up your alley. Are you interested? And I said, oh, thank you so much. And the plan was for my wife to retire in June of 24 at that time. And I said, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna be able to swing it because my wife's got another year of work and blah, blah, blah. So I had dinner with my wife. I said, hey, I got a call. And she knew the colleague because, I worked with him previously and we had gone to some, work dinners together and said, hey, I got a call from, the colleague. And he said, hey, he wants me to go to Argentina. What do you think if you retire a year early and we move to Argentina? And literally she put her fork down, looked at me and said, yeah, let's do it.
Wow.
That's when it got real.
Okay.
It was like completely a nice thought until she said, and then sure enough we made it happen. So
now it's not the response I would have expected, unless was Argentina, was your work already taking you there? Because this seems like completely out of the blue. But
I was born in Argentina. We emigrated to my parents and I emigrated to the United States when I was 3 years old, so 60 years ago, a long time ago. And so, the person I knew that connection. He knew I spoke Spanish because I grew up, my parents spoke Spanish in the home. And they just had this assignment that was literally kind of fit my background like perfectly here, right?
Okay.
And so it just kind of worked out. I mean, lucky coincidence, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So with that said, can you tell us a little more about what do you actually do work now, I guess, both currently and what did you do prior to the extent it was different than this new Argentinian assignment?
Yeah, pretty much my whole career. I'm an engineer, chemical engineer by training, and I worked for a pharmaceutical company in one shape, form or another for the last, almost 40 years now.
Okay.
I worked for Big Pharma for about 30 years. Fortune 500, 10,000, multiples of 10,000 employee companies, right? Mm-hmm. And then about 10 years ago, a little bit less than 10 years ago, left that and moved into these little virtual pharmaceutical companies where you only got like 20, 30 employees. So you're managing, contractors for making materials and doing your studies and stuff. So it's basically managing outside resources to do the same thing you do in big pharma, except big pharma, you have it internal, right? So. Okay.
And are those small, I'm just curious, I don't know much about pharma. Are these small ones? It almost sounds like, are they startups trying to get their big blockbuster drug?
Yeah, there are a lot of times they'll call them a molecule and a man, right? Because there's some of them are really small. So there's usually a compound of interest, and there's been some studies done on them that make them look promising, and you want to get them over the finish line to FDA acceptance and be able to market them. So.
Okay.
So I work in kind of that space where you're, I have worked in the manufacturing. We actually make commercial material that's already approved. But these are for very, very, these are for orphan drug indications. So they're, they're very important, but there's not a lot of people that have these diseases. So they're, just as important as medications for the masses, right?
And can you just walk me through, so you were doing something else, I assume you planned on stopping work in 2024, yeah. This new assignment came up, is it same company or, what happened?
Different company, same basically orphan drug market, right? So different drug, but different same type of thing, just for a different drug. So, like I said, I've been doing that for the small company for about 7 or 8 years, and then took this assignment.
Got it. Yeah. And just curious, why Argentina? Is a company based there, or what's the tie?
We have one of our contractors is based here, so I work with the contractor. So okay. I work for a U.S. company, but we have a contractor down here that that does some of our work, and that's why I'm here to work with them.
And so it sounds like your wife retired. She stopped. She's now living with you down in Argentina, or she's still in the States?
We spend about 75% of our time down here and about 25% in New Jersey, because our corporate offices are in the Philly area.
Got it.
I do go back every now and then.
Okay.
Although pretty much everybody's a remote worker these days.
Right. And since you're from New Jersey, I have to ask, what's your favorite Springsteen song?
Well, that is a really hard question, but I'd have to go with Thunder Road.
Okay. It's classic, yeah. Timeless, yeah.
Yeah, timeless. It's,
yeah. Mine's, good. Yeah, they really are. Mine's probably Atlantic City.
And it's very haunting.
It is. But yeah, I sort of like the slow, kind of calm, almost not macabre, but.
You just like the, they blew up the Chicken Man late last
year. Yeah, yeah. Blew up his house too.
Yeah.
Okay. I had to look up who Chicken Man was. I never heard of that until I first came across the song however many years ago and realized it's a name for some gangster from Philadelphia, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great tune. Okay. So as of now, your retirement plan, if I got this right, you're working till next year, 2025?
Yeah. Till January, February of 2025.
Okay.
And then I may or may not do some consulting depending on how things go with the company.
Are you an employee now, or this is like a 1 year contract?
Right now I'm an employee, but I pretty much, getting old, getting tired.
Yeah. Right.
There's a lot to do, and, I've kind of said, I'll certainly help in any way I possibly can after I retire if you need me. But I really need to taper back and kind of start doing some other stuff.
Makes sense. Which ties in nicely to the next questions. What are your goals and priorities for retirement, both financial and non-financial?
So, I mean, just being, to live a comfortable life. I don't have a lot of, big spending hobbies. I am a woodworker. I know you are too. So that's probably my big spend on tools.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But I like to go out to dinner. We enjoy, going to, there's local playhouses and stuff like that every now and then city and doing a little traveling. That's kind of the wish, so to have enough money to do that. I don't really, I'm not thinking legacy. If there's there likely will be a legacy, but I'm not thinking in terms of, leaving any specific amount or anything like that. Right. So just kind of to be independent, not be a burden on anybody really is kind of the desire. Right.
Yeah. I think that's a fair goal for lots of people, even like myself with my kids. I just want them to be happy, independent adults that aren't burdens to the people around them or society at large. Right. You know, it really is sort of that simple in my mind, but
cool. Very good.
So general retirement planning questions about yourself and your journey thus far. When did you really start to get serious about thinking about and planning for your retirement?
So when I left Big Pharma, I enrolled in a workshop, a retirement workshop. To tell you the truth, I'm not exactly sure why I did that, but I did. And it was one of these community college kind of things, a couple hours, right? They give you this, you know, this book. And it was quite good. It was, you know, it was really kind of got me focused on, oh yeah, there's all these different aspects. Cause you know, when you're in that accumulation phase, you know, you throw the money in the 401k and,
right,
you know, and you kind of, and it's, you know, I won't say it's easy, but you know, you push a couple of buttons and that savings kind of accumulates. The trying to figure out how to take it out and all the implications of that is a little bit more difficult. And so I figured I should learn a little bit about that. And so that kind of was where I kind of started on that journey. And, you know, they had some worksheets that you filled out, kind of went through them. And really kind of, again, the thing that kind of surprised me, that shouldn't surprise me, it's just, I never thought of it in the context of retirement. You really got to plan for these things, right? It's like anything else, right?
Right. Right.
Right. You got to plan and, you know, and your plan doesn't have to be perfect. And that's a, you know, kind of a thing I also learned, right? Cause you know, at the first I'm trying to get it down to the, you know, every dollar spent, yeah. Right. And it's like, yeah, that's not, you know, that's not going to happen. And I don't have enough information to do that. Nobody does.
Yeah.
Right. But I still figure, you know, you got to plan for something. So you kind of do it in broad brushes and it gets, and like I said, the plan changes as life evolves. Right. So I wasn't married at the time. I just come off a divorce. Right. So, and you know, life went on and the plan has changed, continually changed and you got to adapt to it. So, that's kind of what got me started. And like I said before, a couple of years ago, I started the walking and that really kind of really set me really focused because now I got into the, you know, spreadsheet and, you know, and listening to various different strategies of where you should have your money and, you know, should you do Roth conversions and when do you take Social Security and all that stuff. So that kind of, and I spent about, you know, 2 years going through, you know, various podcasts and YouTube videos and such.
Yeah.
It's intriguing. It's complex, but it's intriguing in a way.
Yeah. Now, did you find it, I want to say frustrating, but there's so much information out there and so many different opinions and views and so many different ways to skin the proverbial cat with all this stuff. Yeah. At first, it's like drinking from the fire hose. Like you hear this podcast, ooh, I should do that. That sounds good. Then you hear another one. It's like, oh, wait a second. That's a different way to do that same thing. Did you get to the point where you consumed enough and learned enough that you realized none of these things are right or wrong necessarily? They're all just different approaches. So you got to the point you can sort of sift through and realize what's the core of what they're getting at and what makes the most sense for you.
Yeah, I tend to, you know, I learned this lesson at work a while. There's a lot of times there's not a right and a wrong.
Yeah.
Right. There's various shades of gray, and you know, you got to make a decision, and you don't have all the information because you're never going to have all the information. You just got to make a decision, and you'll have to adjust potentially later on. So you know, I kind of brought that thinking into it. So you know, first I was in kind of the accumulation, all right, let me find out what this is without kind of saying, oh, I'm going to just change, right? So it wasn't like, all right, listen to this podcast. Oh, I should put all my money in the S&P 500. Oh, okay,
right,
now I should switch it all to Treasury. Inflation is going up. I should do this, right? So I tend to mull things over a bit more than probably is necessary. So that
you're an engineer, case, so yeah,
right, yeah. Exactly. So it's like, all right, what are the possible, you know, traps here? What am I not thinking of? Right, I try to mull it over. So, but you're right. There is a excruciating amount of information, and the you know, retirement. The whole retirement system, or I don't know if it's a system, but there's just, it's so complicated. I mean, you know, you don't realize one little thing affects this little thing over here, right? If you pull out too much money, you get hit with more taxes and potentially the surcharge there with the, when you have Medicare and, you know, and you got to kind of, at least, you know, I don't want to say you got to get to the last dollar, but you got to think some of those things through. And at least even if like a thing like a Roth conversion, right? I think I'm going to do one of those at some point. Mm. Exactly when I'm not, I play with the spreadsheet and I play with the programs and, but I think, you know, I kind of have backburnered some of those right now. It's a thought. It's just not a fixed thought that I'm going to do, you know, A versus B. Right.
Yeah.
So, but it is, there's a myriad of information out there and you're right. It's really complicated. And you know what? You have to, people like, there are things that interest me and things that don't. And the things that don't, I don't really get involved in. Right. But this one I took an affection to, I kind of like it. I kind of like the thinking it through and the, what if I do this? And what if I do that? So it's kind of enjoyable just from an intellectual level on me. Right. It's practical too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I'm biased in saying this, but definitely practical. And it's information that applies to everyone, whether or not they choose to run with it themselves or farm it out or just completely put their head in the sand and whatever's going to happen is going to happen, which some people do. It is important. And I guess I was talking about this with someone else the other day. All the information's out there. Like you can find, there's nothing I say in these podcasts or to clients that isn't already in existence on Google. The difference is, do you want to be the one to learn it all, put the time in, synthesize it, package it together cohesively and apply it to you or not? Like me, you and I, you know, big into woodworking, we enjoy being mechanically inclined and making things and designing things. But like me, I want nothing to do with auto repair, even little things like changing brakes. I can change a tire if I have to, but not because I can't. I decided I'm not going to put my energy there. I'm going to farm that out. So in that sense, you know, you can sort of say finances are similar sort of vein.
Same thing. Yep.
Yeah.
What you're interested in, right?
Yep. Definitely. So when you did start going down this rabbit hole, obviously you mentioned this podcast, but what other resources and content areas did you lean on to listen, to read, to watch, to really learn this stuff?
So I went to the library and took some books out in retirement and I maybe got through a third of them. So this is really boring stuff. But and then some of them were a little bit dated, so not that they were probably still okay, but it just, you know, just didn't do it for me. The podcasts I really got into, so the YouTube I kind of got into. So in addition to yours, I do like the Retirement Answer Man. I believe that's his podcast. That's Whitney, I think.
Roger Whitney. Roger. Yep.
Yeah, he's really good. Listening to him got me thinking about the non-financial aspects of retirement, which is another thing that I never thought of. I should have, but I never, you know, just never dawned on me. And it's like when they started talking about it, it's like, wow. Really? I should be thinking about that, right?
Definitely.
And that's probably as important. I tell you know, people are, you know, that I talk to my friends about it. That's probably more important. I mean, obviously once you're financially stable, that's, you know, probably the most important thing you should think about. What are you going to do with your time? So that was really helpful in that regard. I do like Bob Berger. He has a bunch of, YouTube videos and newsletters that are quite helpful, you know, and, you know, keeps you kind of current on some of the stuff. Yeah. And then there's a guy called Joe Kuhn. I don't know if you know of him. He's an interesting guy. He's an engineer that worked at a aluminum manufacturing facility somewhere in the Midwest and now does retirement YouTubes. So being an engineer, and I don't even know how I came upon him. It was probably just a Google search. But, you know, he breaks things down very simplistically, right? And I guess just because he's an engineer, there's a lot of common thinking. So I find his YouTube's kind of helpful in understanding the broader aspects of retirement. So those are kind of the.
Yeah. How do you spell Joe's last name? So I can find put a link to it.
Kuhn.
Kuhn. Okay. Haven't heard of him. I'll have to take a look.
Yeah. He also has podcasts on reliability engineering, if you're interested in that.
I am not. Thank you. it really is amazing how much good information is out there. Like Rob Berger's stuff. That's phenomenal. He breaks it down really clean, really practical, really common sense.
Yep.
It's all free. I don't know about the newsletter, but
Newsletters,
like the
YouTube
videos. They are. Okay.
Yeah.
It just, you know, comes back to the point that there's so much good information out there. It's there for the taking if you're willing and able to find it, to digest it, to synthesize it. In places like Rob's YouTube and Roger's podcast and Joe's, I'll have to check that out. Fantastic, fantastic education. And these people, even people like Rob, who aren't advisors, aren't in the business, give much better guidance and education than the vast majority of advisors I've come across. And it's all free. So
yeah, it's amazing. But you have to have an interest, right? Because if...
yeah, you do. Exactly. Right. Right. 100%. So with that said, you have, seems like you've gotten pretty well up to speed over the last handful of years in this. Where would you self-assess yourself and your knowledge about financial planning, tax matters, et cetera?
Yeah, I think I'm above average. There's still a lot I don't know. And there's, you know, some things that that I don't know that I'll ever know.
Right.
But I think I know enough to kind of, and I've been fortunate that I work for Big Pharma, so I have a fixed pension, right? And
okay. And
my wife worked as a teacher, so she has a fixed pension. So you know, so we're in pretty good shape from the financial side that, you know, and you know, we built a buffer into our planning. So if things go south a little bit, we're okay. And so, so I think I know enough to kind of possibly be dangerous, but,
and the pensions really help. That gives you a lot of wiggle room to mess stuff up. So
yeah, it does.
Good. Regarding the financial aspects of retirement planning, what do you wish you would have known or done differently when you were younger?
So one thing I definitely wish, there's two things I think would have done different. First of all, I didn't plan my, you know, my kids' college tuition payments all that well. So there was probably some years I had to take out, I had two in college at a time, and I probably had to take out more money and got taxed more heavily because, right. So that planning was kind of an oversight, right. Water under the bridge. Right. So that I think would have planned a little bit better. Didn't really kind of, you know, I don't even know if they were around at the time, but I think by the time I've learned about them, my kids were already going to college. Those, the
529s.
Yeah. The 529. Yeah. So that, maybe that would have been something I should have probably considered. The second thing is early in my career, maybe the first 10, 15 years, I was in a lot of these funds that had high fees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were offered through work and, you know, like they seemed more attractive than your regular S&P 500 fund
right.
at the time. And then, you know, I kind of learned, I was like, yeah, this, you know, this is like, you know, a lot of, you don't realize how much money you're paying in fees sometimes until you actually do the math, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you're busy with life, so it's hard to look at these little things. And I think the information's gotten better over the last 20, 30 years in terms of providing some of that, right? It was always there. It was just not as in your face as it is nowadays, right? Right?
Yeah.
So I wish I would have stuck to more of a, you know, an S&P 500 fund or, you know, bond fund, those kind of things, rather than these, you know, the active, I guess the passive funds versus the active funds. Right.
Right.
So those are the two things I wish I would have done a little bit differently, but you know, it all worked out. So.
Okay. Yeah. The active versus passive, going back 20 years ago or so, passive existed, but it wasn't nearly as known or understood or sort of advocated at the time. For better or worse, the standard was actively managed mutual funds where the fee was 1%, maybe 1.5% if it was high.
Okay. You know,
beyond that, it's just ungodly, but still exists. And that's all people really knew when you did it. And thankfully, for the most part, markets have done well, especially like late 90s. And then there was the tech bust and stuff and the global financial crisis. But people made money long-term, right? If you were sitting in this stuff, you didn't notice you were getting 1.5% shaved off because your accounts went up.
So yeah,
fine, whatever. Yeah. Looking back now, when you compare like historical returns to what you could have had, it's like, oh my God, like light bulb went off. Like obviously I should have been in different funds, but so don't kick yourself. I mean, it's what, better or worse, most people just did what was put in front of them. But yeah, I completely agree with you. If we can go back and know now what we knew, no, I'm sorry, knew then what we know now about fees and the impact of fees and active versus passive, it's almost a no-brainer. But you know, that's hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah.
So, All right. Same question, but non-financial aspects. What do you wish you would have known or done differently when you were younger?
About retirement?
Yeah, which is kind of a hard question because you're not retired yet, right? So it's kind of hard to prepare decades in advance for like the non-financial aspects of retirement, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really have a good answer to that. Not something I really thought about too much.
Quite right. It sounds like you're aware of it now, as you mentioned, like the non-financial aspects are important. What are you going to do with your time, et cetera?
I guess. So maybe if I would have known that, before, two, 3 years ago, that I would have been able to think it through a little bit more. Although, three years, fair enough, is still a good time to think it through.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Right. So I guess, being aware of it, I wish I would have been aware of it earlier, but I don't know that I necessarily would have done much about it in my 40s, right?
Right. Yeah. Fair point. I agree with that. Do you work with an advisor? If so, what makes it worth it to you?
No, I do not. I've considered it, but I've never pulled the trigger for one reason or another. Either I've been too busy or not. The accumulation part has always gone relatively well. As you already said, the markets kind of have done pretty well, right? And I've always been in either dividend stocks or S&P 500 type of stock. So, that's, and now I am considering probably doing a one-time after retirement. I think, financially we're going to be okay. It's just now, what little things can I potentially kind of tweak out of it? And I'm not, not that it's going to make or break the bank, but, it might as well have somebody else look at it and kind of make sure that everything's okay and, that I'm not delusional.
Right. Yeah. Right. Can't hurt at a minimum to get sort of a once over. I think a lot of people don't need and shouldn't pay for an ongoing advisor because it's not cheap, especially if you already know you're in good shape, et cetera. But having a sort of one-time holistic view can't hurt. Worst case, you get nothing out of it. And, they just reiterate that, yeah, you're fine. Do what you're doing. But
right.
Maybe you do find some stuff here and there that makes it valuable. All right. So you mentioned you are married and she's already retired, correct? So
yes.
You can do your South America thing. Obviously you're involved in the planning. Is she, what's the extent of her involvement and interest in the financial planning for you two?
So she's not super interested. She kind of lets me do my thing. I do like to, bounce everything off her. I want her to be informed, right? But she lets me kind of do the grunt work and I do the executive the executive review with her. Okay, here's, so I might run through, 40 what if scenarios.
Sure.
Right. And go through the weeds on this and that. And then, you throw about, 20 of them out right away. These make no sense. And then, and then I'll say, well, we're considering doing this. What do you think? And, she'll kind of look at it and say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Or, maybe we should think about it more or whatever. I do like, we probably need to plan more time. This is another thing that time kind of gets the better of you, right?
Yeah.
To sit together and go through these, right? You got to kind of like plan it because it's not a spontaneous thing you're going to do. You're not going to say, honey,
right.
No, tonight we're going to go through her.
No.
Right. So that's probably on the list of to-dos along with a lot of other stuff to go through them. But we have gone through them a couple of times and, we're pretty comfortable at where we're at. And again, any major decisions, obviously, we don't take, we take together. So, but I do basically the grunt work and try to come up with a thing. And then, if she has any advice, I'll go back and do some more grunt work. Right. And say, yeah, okay, let's look at that or something like that. So that's kind of the way, it's kind of broken down in our house. And again, it's a level of interest. She's, she's very interested in some things that I'm not, and I'm not interested in some things that she is. And, so we, it's kind of just evolved that way.
Yeah.
But I think we're comfortable with each other's role. So I think that's kind of the most important thing.
Right. Exactly. Right. Now, not to get too personal, but you did mention this is a second marriage for both of you. Is there any planning considerations, previous spouses, et cetera, that are still folded into your plans, or it's really just the two of you at this point is the point?
No, like I said before, I think the legacy thing is we're not planning on it. If it happens, great. right? Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's kind of independent. All the kids are kind of independent. So there's really not to think about, you know, who's going to pay for college or anything like that. Because it's all done, right?
It's done. Okay.
So it's really, you know, what are you going to leave? And you know, if it's there to be left, it's there to be left. And if it's not, it's not.
Enjoy it. Right? Yeah.
So we'll see what the market brings in the next 20, 30 years.
Right. Yeah. I think that's common. That's generally most people's legacy plan is enjoy what they have and not run out to the extent that anything's left. Sure, it's going to go to the kids or to charities or to whomever. But I find that most people don't have this super strong burning legacy desire that I want to ensure I leave at least $1 million to each child or whatever it is. But some do, in which case that you have to get a little more creative with the planning of how to ensure that that happens and still finance the life you want to have. But that's the exception, not the norm from what I've seen. Okay. So now some more technical nerdy things. So it sounds like you will be retiring before 65, unless you change your mind. What's the plan for health insurance pre-Medicare?
So I was luckily, I worked for a Fortune 500 company. I actually left when I was just turned 55. In fact, I wasn't 55 yet, but I got credit for being 55 because I left in the month of my birthday when I turned 55.
Oh, okay. Nice.
And so, so I'm considered a retiree, so I can opt into that plan at any time, which isn't going to be too important for me because I'm going to probably retire at 64 in 9 months, but okay. it will be useful for my wife. Because that she'll be able to tap in, you know, we'll be able to tap into it for 2025 and then she'll be able to stay on it after I go on Medicare.
Got it. And she's a retired teacher, it sounds like?
She is, yes.
Does she have access to retiree health insurance through her
district? She does not. She doesn't have, I guess you needed a certain number of years and she didn't get to the minimum.
Okay. And how old is she, if you don't mind me asking? I'm just curious to the extent there's a big difference in that matters.
There's not a big difference. It's a couple of years.
Got it.
I'd rather not give you her exact age.
Fair. I'm with you. But right. 29. She's 29 is what you're supposed
exactly.
to say.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Social Security. What's the strategy for you two with Social Security claiming?
So that's one of the ones that is another tough one. About so in general, I think, you know, I made the more money over the career. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably defer till 70.
Okay.
This is all, you know, dependent on what ends up happening with the government, which nobody will never figure out, but most likely. And then hers is still a kind of a TBD. So we'll probably do a year to year figuring out. Yeah. And right now, leaning towards, you know, waiting till the end for kind of tax reasons, mostly, right? That, you know, you do some Roth conversions instead and things of that nature. But we'll, you know, we're going to probably, you know, look at it again on a year-to-year basis after I'm retired and make a call whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense to do that. I mean, if we remain healthy, I don't think there's any reason at this point to right. you know, to take it until you're at least six, until you're a retirement, what is it called, the full retirement age?
Full retirement age.
Yeah. Or, you know, defer it even until you're 70, because that's 8% a year. That's pretty good return, right?
Right. And does she already start her teacher pension?
Yes.
She did.
So once you leave, you got to start it.
Got it. And I assume she's taught in New Jersey. So New Jersey pays into Social Security. So she'll get Social Security. Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
And how about your pension? What's when are you able to start that?
I have to take it at 65. I can take it any time before, but again, I haven't. No reason to take it before 65. So
is there any sort of like growth escalator to it where it grows until 65 or
No, it grows until 65 and then it doesn't grow. And then, you know, the big decision is, the lump sum or the annuity, right?
Yeah.
And that's another one that you can kind of think through until you're blue in the face and maybe still not make the right decision.
that's a tough one. I mean, you've probably already sort of figured out the inputs to it, but yeah. You want to compare that or sort of take stock of what other guaranteed income sources will you have. So your wife's pension, social securities, sort of map that versus what your anticipated kind of minimum expenses will be throughout retirement.
Right.
If there's a shortfall, maybe consider the pension annuity option from your pension. Also take into account your investable assets. If it's really large relative to your other expenses, then probably fine. And then like the emotional sort of subjective things, how conservative are you to, how much do you value the guaranteed paycheck aspect of things versus do you want to put it in the market and, you know, maybe make it grow more. Yeah. And then if you do, the other thing is like compare the annuity option to commercial annuities. Like if you were to take the lump sum instead and go buy a commercial annuity from whatever insurer, would it get you more or less monthly payment than what your pension would?
So I've played with it a little bit. It probably still needs a little bit more work, but I've done basically what you've said, right? Which is basically go out there and see you can take the lump sum and put it in an annuity. and see what the return is on again, without a lot of detail. And it was probably a couple of years ago. So, you know, numbers have changed dramatically.
Right.
But, you know, I kind of know them, you know, what I think I need to do. It's just, I kind of just need to dig into it a little bit more in detail with the current numbers and figure out which is best out of that. But leaning most likely right now, my thought process is to probably take the lump sum.
Okay.
But that may change.
And this is one of those things, like you said before, it's gray. Like you don't really know what the best or right decision is. You got to lay out the pros and cons, pick something and run with it.
And don't look back because you can't.
Exactly. Once you pull the trigger, it's over.
Once you make a decision, it's done.
But no, I'm sure you'll be fine, whatever you choose. My one thought is like you said this was a few years ago, I did the analysis and things have changed. So all else equal, lump sums have come down a lot in the last few years as interest rates have gone up.
Yep.
So like 3 years ago, if we're talking 2020, 2021, the annuity amounts you can get from the pension for a given amount of lump sum were much more generous in most cases than what commercial annuities can get you. Could be a different story now. As lump sums have come down and interest rates have gone up, so commercial annuities pay out more. So it does make the decision harder now than it was 3 years ago, in my opinion. But I'm sure you'll do swell at it. I have faith in you.
There you go.
Roth conversions, we sort of touched on, and I bring this in here just because this is like a crowd favorite question. What's your strategy, if any, around conversions? Do you think they make sense for you? When do you plan on doing them, et cetera?
Yeah. So most likely I will, you know, again, with the information I have now, it looks like it would be of benefit to do some after I'm retired, right?
Okay.
The income stream slows down, right? Yeah. So I've modeled a couple of them and, you know, kind of looks like, you know, 50 a year or something like that would be benefit to kind of, you know, get the longer term tax advantage, I guess you'll call it. Right. Mm-hmm. But again, it's going to be year by year. Right. I mean, so I'll look at it every year and I'll say, yeah, it makes sense or it doesn't make sense based on what the income level is for that year. And again, it kind of plays into, is it kind of like the tentacle argument right now? If do you do lump sum or do you do the annuity?
Yeah.
Right. If your income stream is different, if you do the annuity, than if you do the lump sum, right? So you got to figure all that out and it'll probably be a year by year thing, but I do think that there is going to be some benefit to doing some conversions between 60, you know, 66 and 70, right? Because then 70 Social Security will kick in and that'll, you know, move you up a little bit more too, right?
Right.
So
crowds out that much more of your tax brackets there.
Right.
Home. Do you own a home?
I do. We own a home. We bought it about 5 years ago. We had about 10 years on our mortgage. It's an extremely low rate, so it doesn't really make too much sense to pay it off. You can put the money in treasuries and still come out ahead. it's kind of the plan. I kind of set up money aside in treasuries for it to kind of.
Yeah, it makes sense. If you're getting treasuries and, you know, you're getting whatever, guaranteed 4 or 5%, depending on the bond, and you're only paying probably
2.75, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah, so pure dollars and cents says keep it. And now this is an interesting one. It's a ongoing hot topic of should you have a mortgage in retirement? Should you pay it off? And pure dollars and cents in your case is keep the mortgage because you're losing money by paying it off basically compared to what you can get elsewhere on your cash. But there are some people that don't want any debt hanging over them, period. And they sleep better if the mortgage paid off. And just the concept of entering retirement without this ongoing payment requirement makes sense for them. And they get more value out of just paying it off as opposed to the pure math dollars and cents argument. So for what it's worth, my stance to people is do what you think makes the most sense for you. Understand the dollars and cents of it.
Right.
But you have to also weigh the intangible subjective things and don't let someone tell you you're wrong for paying off your mortgage if it makes you sleep better at night.
Yeah, no, I you know, so the house mortgage is kind of the one exception. I mean, I loathe credit card.
Oh, right. Well, because it's expensive.
And car, you know, car loan. I don't like that at all. It has to be done sometimes, right? But but the mortgage one, I plus the asset is kind of growing. Well, hopefully growing, right?
Yeah, it's
growing,
right.
Right. So, right. I mean, so that also helps. But yeah, I think you know, at this point, you know, just out of luck, right? Just out of having a mortgage 5 years ago and getting such a low rate, and the fact where treasuries are now, it just does make absolutely zero sense to me. But I do appreciate that there are people, some have an emotional attachment to not having debt when they retire.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely.
And I can appreciate that. And I think it's one of those things where there's no right or wrong. There's like a 1,000 different grays here, right? And you may pick right, may pick wrong, you know.
Yeah. I don't know who originally came up with this, but there's a saying floating around called personal finance is more personal than it is finance. And like,
it is emotional. It is. There are
100%. Yeah. And the mortgage emotion example is a prime example of it. There's so who knows what someone's family history of money, or maybe they were raised by a depression era parent who, you know, debt that would crush
you. Their home to.
Exactly.
You don't know. Right. And those can be really hard lessons. You know, and I think we're all creatures of our experience, right?
Yeah.
You know, so if you grew up and not expecting a lot, you generally don't expect a lot.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, you know, just happens to be that way generally. I mean, you know, there's no absolute black and white here either. So.
Yeah. Agreed. So now when you do retire, what do you plan on doing living wise with house in New Jersey, second home, move, downsize, et cetera?
No, I love New Jersey. So I'm staying in New Jersey for the long term. All right. We do have a house. It's not a huge house, but it's bigger than, you know, it's got Maine as any house does. So I think, in 15 years or so, we'll probably be looking at a condo rather than a house. But we're really enjoying the house. We're really enjoying the neighborhood we're in. We enjoy the fact that we're, an hour from New York and an hour and a half to 2 hours from Philly. And there's a million things to do in New Jersey and in those two cities, right? So, it's easy to get a lot of other places. If you want to go to other places, I'm going to jump on a plane at Newark. And so,
yeah, definitely.
So really enjoy New Jersey. We'll definitely stay there. But I think that at some point in time, the house will be just, too much maintenance, right?
Right.
Not that we don't enjoy doing some of that, but, you get older, it gets a little harder, right?
Yeah. No, it definitely does. And I like your comment. It's easy to make fun of New Jersey, and I get why, but it does have a lot going for it. Proximity to major cities, beach, mountains, not mountains by like West Coast standards, but mountains to go skiing or whatever. So case in point, I live in what's called Central New Jersey, and I'm going to a concert in September. One of my favorite bands is coming around touring. They're doing two shows in New York, one show in Philly. And pure mileage wise, I live closer to New York, but it's actually easier and less of a headache for me to drive to Philly. So I got tickets to go to Philly. It's about an hour and 15 minute door-to-door drive for me. If I were to go to the city, it's probably about the same between taking mass transit and switching to a subway and whatever. But it's nice to have so much access and availability to you, a lot like we have here. So,
it's great. And the mass transit, it's not super great in New Jersey, but getting into the city from where you are or where I am, it's an hour now.
Yeah. Yep.
Once you get to the city, if the concert's not at Madison Square Garden, you Right. You got to jump on something else. But if it's at the Garden, you're in pretty good shape because
it's a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like New Jersey. I don't know if I'll stay here long term, but maybe I'm biased. I'm sure I'm biased because I was raised here, grew up here, and I'm comfortable with it and know it well. But it gets a bad rap, and I understand why, but it really does have a lot.
Some of my friends have decided to retire, and some in North Carolinas and Carolinas. Yeah. Some of those places, Florida, and I said, I don't mind paying the extra taxes. I kind of like New Jersey. It's worth it for me, and that's true of everything, right?
Right.
If you really like a really expensive car, it's worth it to you.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's not worth it to some other people that don't like expensive cars, right? They just want to get from point A to point B, and they could care less whether it's got a button that does this or a button that does that. So it's what's important to you. You got to kind of go with.
Yeah. Good bagels. So I'm staying in New Jersey.
There are good bagels. There are good bagels.
Yes,
good
there are.
Pizza too. Pizza's hard to find elsewhere.
And Domino's doesn't count for everyone listening.
Yeah, Domino's not real pizza.
All right. This next one, this can go a lot of ways, and I probably should have broke this down into sort of multiple sub questions, but what's your overall plan and approach for investments in terms of how you're allocated, or do you plan on bucketing distributions, or what is your distribution plan?
Yeah. So I have, in the last year or so, I built my own little, I think it's a bond ladder with treasuries for the next three, for the years that I'm 65 through 67. Right.
Okay.
Like a quarterly amount that'll come out that it should pay for expenses for that quarter. So that's kind of, at least covers me for 3 years. Right. I tend to be a big S&P 500 guy. So I was probably mostly in that type of investment, some individual stocks, but dividend stocks, nothing too crazy. Right. Probably have more stocks, and probably right now I'd say I'm probably about an 80-20 stocks to bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I think I have a lot of there's a term for it that I learned from your show, but I can't remember. Where you have the capital, there's maybe it's not capital, it's
risk capacity.
Yeah, there you go. The risk capacity. So I think I have the risk capacity to tolerate that, which is why I'm kind of leaning that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, over the years, it will taper down, right? If the market has another, good year or two, maybe I'll put another year's worth to treasuries and kind of continue that philosophy, right?
Right.
If not, I'll just hold off and hope for the comeback, right? Because you got to believe in America, right? Over the long haul, it's going to do well, right? So where it has done well, and hopefully will continue to do well. So that's kind of the thinking there.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. Your comment about you have to believe in America doing well. I'm with you, and it's not just blind faith, but like someone asked me the other day, my views about, on a previous episode, the deficit, and is it sustainable, and does it concern me? And I had a long-winded answer, and it's not a black and white question or subject, but it basically came down to, if the U.S. really does get itself in such a bad spot, deficit-wise, inflation-wise, stock market tanks and doesn't correct, not to downplay the impact it'll have on people's finances, but we have much bigger problems.
Oh, yeah.
If the U.S. gets unseated as sort of the global flag bearer for currency stability, stock market, overall economy health, et cetera. Now, maybe that's a gullible or a naive thing for me to say and believe in, but I truly feel like if it's that bad, does any of this stuff really matter much?
Well, and then you got to think of where are you going to put your money? Do you really think that America is going to do poorly and some other place is going to do way better?
Right.
You might get lucky here and there, but long term, year in, year out, it's hard to hard to fathom that some other countries' investments will do spectacularly better than the United States.
Right. For a prolonged period, maybe short little spurts of time here and there. Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm with you on that. So this next block of questions doesn't really apply. It's for those who are already retired, but I'm just curious, in your arrangement now, are you sort of was I retired or transitioned, or you're still working full time in this career?
No, I'm still working full time, working a little more than I really want to. But
okay, so forget that. I was just curious, like, if you did have any sort of like dipping your toe in the water of the retirement phase, if you had any sort of views.
You know, so the only toe dip, I don't know if you'd call it a toe dip because I'm working, but we did plan, you know, our retirement, one of it was to travel. Was to kind of just pick a city and spend a month there, not an expensive city, but pick a, you know, and spend a month there in an Airbnb, right? Get there. And then once you're there, you know, it's basically, you know, whatever it's going to cost you to eat dinner in the Airbnb. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, do day trips or, you know, whatever. Right. But, so that was the plan, right? So this is kind of a toe dip or a major maybe foot dip or leg dip.
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, we're basically spending 75% of our time overseas, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of the only thing that's that it kind of would potentially fall into that category.
Okay. Now, if you were to travel actually in retirement, would it be larger, like international travel like you're doing now, or it'd be more local, smaller stuff, you think?
So I think, you know, there's always going to be the day trips or the weekend trips, you know, even to New York or Boston or Washington, mm-hmm. or things of that nature, right? So I think those, you know, those will come, you know, more frequently. But what we're thinking is, you know, once a year doing like a, you know, a month-long stay in, it could be the United States. We haven't really settled on a place. I mean, Hawaii is very intriguing. Mm-hmm. I got to see what the finances look like there. But so that looks pretty intriguing. You know, I'd like to, you know, go to some places in Europe and hang out there. You know, I've been fortunate in my career. I've been able to travel and see a lot of the world. But, you know, when you're working, you kind of, you know, right. you kind of see it on the periphery, right?
Exactly.
So I'd like to kind of get a little bit more more embedded in a place, and I don't like to pack a lot. So I don't, you know, it's not like I like to, you know, to hop, you know, city 3 days here and 3 days there, mm-hmm. and 4 days there. I like to kind of just be fixed and kind of just roam around that area and get really familiar with that. So the locations, we've kicked around probably a dozen locations over the years, and none of them is fixed. And, you know, it's going to be maybe a, you know, 6 months out kind of decision. Okay, let's pick there and do that. Hawaii, yeah. though, is looking very intriguing. If I haven't looked at it financially in a while, but I'd be lovely to spend a month in Hawaii just hanging out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. For obvious reasons. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just curious, your wife, the two of you, more or less on the same page with travel intentions and desires, yeah. and what you think you are. Okay.
Yeah. We're very, very travel compatible.
Good. So, that's important.
We both do half the share of the work and organizing it, which is the downside of traveling, right? There's some organization there, which is why I don't like to hop. Because
right.
you got much more planning to do, right?
A lot of planning,
you just
a lot
pick
of
one place. It's okay. We picked that place. So today we want to go here. We'll jump on a train and go there for a day and come back, right? Which is a little bit easier.
Yeah,
than...
yeah. I like travel to some extent. The planning isn't enjoyable. I'd rather just sort of show up, figure out what to do for a few days, and then. Yeah. And then leave. But the downside is, if you don't put the work in to learn what's there, what's available, you know, whatever, you end up not.
So we have a rule: if you've organized it, if you haven't organized it, you can't complain about it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Right? Yeah. So if you really got your heart set on doing something, you plan it.
Put the work in. Yeah. Okay. All right. And the final question: if you can give only one piece of advice or guidance to others about retirement planning, what would it be?
So I would say start thinking of planning, and again, it doesn't have to be a very detailed plan, but, and you know, it depends on your age, right? The younger you are, you still should think about it. It doesn't have to be, you know, a super detailed thing, but have some thoughts about where you want to be, maybe write them down. It's always good to write them down because, you know, you can go back and look at them and not have, be clouded from what you thought you wrote down. Right. And think about not only the financial aspect, which obviously is really big, but also, you know, what do you really want to do? And do some scouting, right? I mean, if you think you want to live in, Florida, you know, go stay in Florida for a couple of weeks to make sure that's what you really want to do. Right. And, or, you know, whatever it is, right. If you want to do woodworking, you know, do some woodworking before you actually, you know, go out and buy, you know, thousands of dollars worth of tools. Right.
Yeah.
So, that would be my advice. But the planning is big. I think you really at least got to start thinking about it, and don't get too stressed out if it's, you know, if it's a very broad brush, because it's basically broad brush, you know, anything 10 years out is broad brush.
Oh, definitely.
Right. There's, you know, no matter how well you think, you know, where you're going to be in 10 years, it's something's going to be a little different.
Yeah.
So don't stress out over that and just kind of, think about it. So that would be my advice.
Great advice. Like Roger Whitney from the Retirement Answer Man show podcast, he often says you have to be agile is his big word.
Yes.
Even in retirement, it's a moving target. Life will change. Circumstances will change. You have to roll with it, because planning out more than a few years, something's going to be different. You have to get comfortable with knowing that's going to be the case and, you know, adapt accordingly when it happens.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, Al, this was great. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing. I'm sure a lot of people got a lot out of it and greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andy. And thank you for your podcast. It really is very good. And not just from the information point of view, but I think you have a way of breaking down things to people that are non-financial people, right?
I try to, yeah.
That really does help, because these are some, you know, complicated things,
right?
And you know, you can really, really kind of get something that goes over your head, and that doesn't help you any, right? You really got to break it down so where people can understand. So very much appreciate, big fan, and good luck with the podcast and with Tenon.
Great, thank you very much, Al.
Have a great day.
Take care now.
Bye-bye.
And that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you, Al, for sharing your time and insight and experiences. I'm sure lots of people will get lots of help from it. I find these episodes are really informative and insightful for others to hear firsthand how others are thinking about things, going through things, pain points, what their considerations are, concerns, etc. So hope you all get a lot out of it. If you haven't already, it'd be great if you would take a couple mementos to leave a glaringly bright positive review for this podcast on Apple iTunes or whatever other podcast listening platform you may use. Also, if you haven't already, check out the retirementplanningeducation.com website, where you can find access to this podcast, the YouTube channel by the same name, the Facebook group by the same name, a whole bunch of freely downloadable helpful stuff, and a monthly blog where there's good articles written by yours truly every month about various retirement planning related stuff. All right, that's that. Thank you as always for listening. I will see you next time for the 100th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast. Looking forward to that. Take care.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.